Welcome to the Wisdom from the Top of the World podcast, recorded at the Aspen Chapel.
Amazing. And, you know, if you've ever seen the opening of the Christmas tree lights being turned on at the Sardi House, Aspenois are also there. They've been at the Senior Centre and just a fantastic programme that have been part of the chapel for many years. Well, today is the third in a series that I'm doing on being at peace. I've been doing this for a little while. And in the first week, I always have a previously on, just to give you an idea of where we've got to up to now. But in the first week, we looked at the idea that in order to be at peace, in order for us to be at peace, our being, the essence of us needs to be at peace. It's not about the outside circumstances, it's about the essence of us being at peace. We can't control the chaos of the world. We can only bring ourselves into the peace of the present moment and deal with each moment from a perspective of that peace when that moment arrives. So that's what we talked about in the first week. Our role is to remain in the present moment, to use any disturbances that happen as a reminder to stay in the present moment rather than being swept away when a disaster befalls us. And in this way, we remain at peace in what is ultimately, in our lives, a chaotic environment. And the last week I was here, we looked at the chaos that's in the world and the lack of peace there, and explored the way that human consciousness has evolved to a point where the smartness of our technology is not going to help us as we strive for a more peaceful world. Getting smarter is not going to help us. What we need now is not technological advancement, but the development of a wisdom that enables us to see the true nature of reality and respond to that appropriately. And it's through ethical, moral, and spiritual development that will help us survive. The next stage of the evolution of consciousness is into seeing the interdependence of all things, our interconnectivity, the importance of deep and loving wisdom. And if you'd like to see the previous ones or listen to them on podcasts, if you look on the chair in front of you or behind you, the red card will show you how to do that. And the blue card, if you're new to the chapel, will show you how to get on our mailing list. So you can catch up on those. I also talked in that week, a couple of weeks ago, about the breakup of the mental stage of evolution. The idea that truth itself is now being called into question. Previously, we could argue rationally that something was true because of the facts. But, you know, now famously we have alternative facts. Politicians can say something has happened even if it hasn't happened. And people will take it as being so, not because of a basis of fact, but because it suits them culturally. We create facts and ideas that suit our worldview. We become so smart that we can actually create the reality we want to live in. And if people don't like it, then we condemn them as being other, strangers, wrong, unpatriotic, pagan. Humanity is now creating its own reality, whether or not it has any connection to the facts that are intrinsically real. Right now, we're almost looking into a mirror like Narcissus and falling in love with whatever reality we want to create. And what that really begs is questions about the nature of truth. Truth, the word truth from T-R-O-O, true, And that's the old word for it, meaning trusty, faithful, true, that which you can rely on. You know, we use here in the Aspen Chapel a definition of spirituality from Rowan Williams, that spirituality is the cultivation of a sensitive and rewarding relationship with eternal truth, there's that word, and love. So truth is really at the centre of that spirituality. It's difficult, you know, what can we say about truth? I listened to a podcast called The Take, which is a film podcast, Kermode and Mayer's Take, and they actually came up with some definitions of truth, which I think are quite useful. You can use the word truth, they say, in three different ways. First of all, truth one is personal truth. This is my favourite city. That is my favourite book. May I introduce you to the love of my life? All personal truths. There's no point in arguing about those truths. Truth two is arrived at socially. Polls, elections, trials, discussions and arguments in general. So it's a sort of social truth that, you know, we arrive at. And truth three, which is a high bar, is objective truth. Very precise statements such as 11 plus 7 equals 18. It requires no debate. Anyone can reach the same result. Even the most ardently held personal truths and the most debated social truths never rise to the level of objective truths, because something like which film is best is too imprecise and contains a multitude of other questions in the background. And it seems that, you know, we're in a muddle about these three forms of truth. And, you know, that's what gets us into trouble. And when we start looking at what Rowan Williams calls eternal truth, when we start looking at what is eternal truth, then we get into all sorts of trouble. You know, where do you position that idea of eternal truth? It seems more subjective than, you know, objective truth. And one of the problems we have is the way, you know, society is beginning to break down and ghettoise those truths. But the trouble is, you know, when you've got alternative facts and all that sort of business, when truth is hidden, when you hide truth, then reconciliation can't take place. Truth is a requirement for reconciliation. And more world leaders are using the obfuscation of truth in order to control those in their power, because they know that the truth will bring about change that they don't want. You know, the internet shut down, social media is stopped, people are put in prison for saying the truth. And, you know, in this time of globalized communication, the power of truth is, you know, you can see how it brings about change. Leaders fear changes like the fall of communism, the Arab Spring, and other popular movements that have brought about change. And of course, with mass communications, the danger of change is ever greater and ever more difficult to suppress, because, you know, once the gene is out of the bottle. But the truth will out, and we can, you know, optimistically know that there is a flood out there of truth, and world leaders actually can only stand Canute-like before that, trying to restrain the force of it. It will break eventually. I always like the Tao Te Ching, because it sort of describes these things, you know, although it was written, you know, hundreds of years ago. When he talks about the ultimate truth, Lao Tzu says, when the great Tao is forgotten, goodness and piety appear. When the body's intelligence declines, cleverness and knowledge step forth. When there is no peace in the family, filial piety begins. When the country falls into chaos, patriotism is born. And I came across two quotes that really inspired me when I was thinking about this message of truth. I'm a great fan of William Blake's, who wrote Jerusalem. He was an English mystic. And he said, truth can never be told so as to be understood and not believed. Truth can never be told so as to be understood and not believed. In other words, if the truth can be told in a way that can be understood, it will be believed. There's that essence that if you can understand it, then it will be believed. And the second one, which sort of goes in corollary with it, was Wittgenstein said, wherefore we cannot speak, therefore we must be silent. And it's so difficult, isn't it, to talk about ultimate truth. And you've got this thing, trying to get these truths understood, ultimate truths understood, things like eternal life. And yet, on the other hand, being willing to shut up when you don't know what the case is. These two quotes sum up the dilemma we have in recognizing truth when speaking within the realm of absolute truth or eternal truth. To come to an understanding of eternal truth, we have to come to an understanding, if we're going to go into that area, of eternity. And in this finite world, the idea of eternity is a difficult concept. The question is, you know, can we arrive at an objective truth about the nature of reality without it being either a personal truth, something I think, or a social truth, you know, something we all agree on, whether it's personally or socially held? And if there is an objective truth that's held within the area of eternity, then it would seem, if there is a truth there, it would seem to be the most basic of truths and one that changes the game and the way that we live our lives. And even if that was the case, even if there was an eternal truth that we could reach, I'm talking about, you know, reaching into an eternal truth that actually creates a perspective for all other truths, how do you prove it? Which, you know, brings us back to an age-old problem. How do you prove that God exists? And again, the Tao Te Ching sums this up perfectly, this dilemma. Lao Tzu says, the Tao that can be told is not the eternal Tao. The name that can be named is not the eternal name. The unnameable is the eternally real. Naming is the origin of all particular things. Free from desire, you realize the mystery. Caught in desire, you see only the manifestations. Yet mystery and manifestations arise from the same source. And this source is called darkness. Darkness within darkness, the gateway to all understanding. And that sort of sums up that dilemma of, you know, when you start talking about it, you know, it's probably not going to be it because we have a limited understanding when we try and reach that eternal truth. People often say that God is the truth that cannot be spoken of. And that suggests that wherever I, in my particular talk here, go next, I'm about to fail. But I'm going to, as usual, plow on and fail gloriously in what I'm going to say. Because to understand truth is also key to the conundrum of living in the modern world. At what level can we pitch truth? You know, is it personal, social, objective, eternal? Where do we place our chips, you know, in the casino of life? Just to take that, you know, where are we going to place that? And I'm sort of edging us towards placing our chips on the eternal one to say that that actually wins in terms of the other ones. And I'm going to try and do that. Truth, in all its forms, is essentially what is. You know, Byron Katie, when she came, spoke about that. It's a big thing. Truth is what is. Personal truth is what is. Social truth is what is. And objective truth is what is. But, you know, how far can you take that? Yes, you know, 11, you know, plus 7 is 18. We can agree that the temperature here is probably 70 degrees, but, you know, can we go further than all of that? You know, we can in science go further you know, and there's, you know, gets to arguments. Well, what about in spirituality? Can you go further than that? Is Jesus being the Son of God personal truth, social truth, or objective truth? I'd say personally, it's a combination between personal and social, depending on where we stand. But what about the idea, you know, if you can look at it that, but what about our treasured ideas here at the Aspen Chapel? What about the idea that the entire universe is one interconnected entity and that humanity is a part of that entity? That we and the universe are one. You think what Ilya Delia was saying, that we are the universe made conscious of itself, that there is a Unitarian nature to all consciousness and reality, that the universe, that we are the universe made conscious of itself. You know, how do we get to that as being true? What level of truth is that? I was Sam when we visited in college, watched one of my sermons with one of their friends. Said, Dad, you always just go to the etymology of the words. You know, can't you be a bit more scientific than that? That doesn't prove anything. So that's the trouble. You know, we sort of edge towards truth, but you know, how do we actually get there? Gregory, you remember Gregory was sitting, those of you here, a couple of weeks ago there, he was from California. And he said a couple of weeks ago, when he's talking about interconnectedness of all things, he said the fact of driving a car with all the parts coming from different places of the world shows how interconnected we are. And it sort of does. And the existence of a tree that depends on everything around it in order to survive and helps create oxygen for us, you know, to breathe, you know, it sort of points towards that. But what about everything being a part of the same consciousness that brought about and was manifested in the Big Bang and is evolving through millions of years and through many iterations to a point where today that consciousness is seeing, hearing, and feeling itself through humanity and is also aware of its origin and source? You know, these are the sort of things we talk about here. You know, how truthful is that? What we originally called God and what we now see, here's a term, we now see as an ordered urge towards aliveness that is evolving into a perfection that can be imagined but not fully understood. That's how Ilya Delia describes it. I think it's quite good. An ordered urge towards aliveness that is evolving into a perfection that can be imagined but not fully understood. Can this understanding of the unity of nature of all things, can we call that truth? Because if it is, if that is truth, and you know, I do tend to bang on about it here, as being, you know, it is a game changer. And this sort of truth, you know, that I'm talking about is the eternal truth that we're talking about in terms of spirituality. And the only way we can find that out, that truth, is through entering eternity. Eternal truth, you know, there's a sense of that. And as I said before, it's a bit like difficult for us in living in our world to go into the idea of eternity. It sort of doesn't really fit with time. How do you do that? Well, you do it, as we said before, through the portal of the present moment. By being in the present moment, by being in that eternal now, you actually exist in that nature of eternity. It is the one point by living in that now that you do manage to enter into something that is not necessarily time-based. The present moment is the portal to eternity because there is no time in the present moment. There is no past. There is no future. There is only the present moment. You know, it's a long discussion, but it is the portal. And rather than, when you're in that portal, rather than us passing through time, which is what we feel, in the present moment, time passes through us, and we experience the eternity of the present moment. Now, it does take, you know, a bit of meditation and stuff like that. It, complicated subject, but there is the idea that being in the present moment, you do enter into eternity. And It's here, I think, that this truth is found. And the truth is that there is only the present moment. We know that. We have only ever been in the present moment. That is a truth. We've never been in the past. We are in the present moment right now, and we're always in the present moment. It is a truth that is blindingly obvious, but we ignore most of the time because our mind makes decisions about what that's about and about time. But actually, we are only in the present moment. And in entering this present moment, we're able to experience the ultimate connectivity of all things. It's about being present in the present moment. Most of the time, we're not present in the present moment. We're somewhere else. We're having lunch. Well, I wish you'd shut up. When am I going to, you know, get my reception? You know, we're elsewhere. I suppose this start on time, but it's not going to finish on time. You know, it's when we're not in the present moment. In the, you get my point. Meister Eckhart said that the meditative state is being in a place where you realize, this is the description of this moment, it's where you realize that you want for nothing, therefore there is nothing that you have to do to alter the situation. You also have to give up thinking as to what you could do next or what will or should happen. He describes as wanting for nothing, willing nothing, and knowing nothing. That is the experience of being in the present moment. And it's what meditation is about. Getting to a point where you want for nothing, willing nothing, and knowing nothing. You're just there. The moment you do that, you arrive at the truth of what is actually now. All there is to do is practice being in that flow. Zen Master Dogen said, to practice the way, and that is to be in the present moment, is to actualize the limitless realm of the Buddha way and to illume all aspects of the Buddha way, because the Buddha way is actually under everybody's heel. Immersed in the way, clearly understand right on the spot. Immersed in enlightenment, you yourself are complete. He's saying we are actually all immersed in that way, in that present moment, and we are all actually complete. And that is the great secret. The great secret in the whole spiritual game is that we are all fully realized, if we could but realize it. We are all fully realized, if we could but realize it. We are all up to our eyeballs in what Jesus would call living water. If we could get our heads out from under our bottoms and actually see it. All we have to do to give up, all we have to do to get there is to give up everything. And, you know, right the way through Christian literature, you know, seek the kingdom of heaven and all the, that is what that's all about. Seek first the kingdom of heaven and then all things will be given to you. Now, I know that doesn't, you know, giving up everything, just being in that present moment doesn't sound particularly attractive, as all of us want all the things that we want and all of us, you know, want to do all the things we want to do. And you can still want all those things and do all those things, but if you want to arrive at the deepest truth, if you want to understand the nature of enlightenment, if you want to truly be on the way, then this is it. This is it in this moment. This is the portal. And what is the proof that this is the truth? How do you prove that? What is the proof of the existence of the interconnectedness of what we call God? I think there is a proof. And I don't think it's a scientific proof that you do experiments with out there. I think there is a proof of the existence of this. And that proof is perfect, is the experience of perfect peace. The peace that passes all understanding. Yes, it is a personal truth, but it is also a social truth, and at the same time as being an objective truth. You know, some of us have entered into that reality. at one point in our lives where we've got it, where we've seen it, where we've experienced it, that personally know the peace that experience brings. And we can agree to it being a personal and a social truth. It's a peace that just totally has one's body arrive at an okayness. Now, I'm going to risk you, but who's had that sort of experience of perfect peace in their life? Just put your hands up. Just look around. There are, you know, there's not a bad number of people who've had that experience of personal peace in their lives. And any of us who've had our bodies stilled by this level of truth, you know, would claim it as an objective truth. It is the true nature of reality. And it is where you know, this, the cultivation of a sensitive, rewarding relationship with eternal truth and love. That is the moment. And that interconnected reality, I think, has consequences. It means, this is what I think it means, that truth. That's why when you put your money on this, it cashes out all the way along the line. It means that humanity has a duty to share all things for the betterment of that one reality. Humanity has the duty to share all things, that all global problems need to be shared and solved together, that all global wealth is there for the betterment of all, not just for the few, that as Isaac Asimov famously said, there are no nations, there is only humanity. And if we don't come to understand that right soon, there will be no nations because there will be no humanity. Our role is to be able to tell this truth. Our role, people spiritually involved, people doing what we're doing here, all around the world people are doing what we're doing here. Our role is to be able to tell this truth so that it can be understood. And if it is understood, as what's his name said, it will be believed. Every iteration of godness has had the same challenge right over the centuries. Whether it be God as a chariot flying across the sky or Moses and his Ten Commandments, people understood and believed and they changed their ways accordingly. To the point that they often took to, you know, even sacrificing their own children to be reconciled to these gods that they believed in. Look at the Aztecs. Look at Abraham and Isaac. It was taken as truth, and as was Christianity. The truth of Jesus coming from God to save us all. His death so that humanity could be reconciled to God. More children killing. And his resurrection and assumption, and us waiting for the second coming. That was objective truth for centuries, and you got killed if you didn't believe it. That truth still exists today in the minds of many as being an absolute truth. It has guided the thinking of half of humanity for the last 2,000 years. And now, with the evolution of our consciousness and understanding, we can see a truth that includes all religions. Because religions are, after all, a cultural interpretation of truth. And that truth is the Unitarian nature of all reality. Each of these truths through the centuries has enabled humanity to progress as we've unpacked the implication of that truth as it's been interpreted. And the same is true for this truth in our current realization. It's not a final truth. Like all other truths, it can't be seen as the end. Just the nearest that we have in our subjective reality is to come to identifying something that is objectively useful in the understanding of how to live our lives more skillfully. It is objectively useful. And it's where we've got to as a society, a civilization, spiritually, scientifically at the moment. Our challenge is to communicate this reality in a way that truth can never be told so as to be understood and not be believed. To communicate this truth in a way that can be understood and believed. And that is our role and the role of all spiritually minded people. To speak this truth is to bring ultimate peace. Amazing and fantastic. Well written. That was absolutely brilliant. Thank you, Danielle. So we were just given an opportunity for people just to come back at things that have been said at the front of the room. I always like to say that the what we say here is given with the willingness to be wrong. But so if anybody would like to either share an experience or say anything or ask a question about what we've been talking about, please feel free to do that. If we don't get any, that's fine as well. We like a bit of silence and a bit of being in the present moment. Dee Dee.
I would say the experience that I had was being in a hospice with a loved one who was passing. And it was like being in the middle of a centrifuge, right? You knew the world was spinning around there. But in that room, there was nothing else. It was extremely peaceful. It wasn't sad, but it was quiet. Yeah. And there was no time. The only other experience I've had of that was under the influence of a psychedelic many years ago, and that also was very powerful.
Yeah.
No time.
No time. Yeah, thank you. Anybody else? Oh, yes. Didn't see you at the back.
I'm Neela, and I don't do this very often, but I think that when we think about time, like you say, this moment is all we have. Sometimes we hear a voice in the back of our head saying, go do that, or someone needs help. And sometimes we dismiss it, we go on, and then we think, oh, you know, what if I could have said something or kind of uplifted that person? So I think to just be aware in the small community that we have in the Valley of any moment that we have the opportunity to just reach out and do what we're called to do, whether you kind of recognize it or not, it might be just that still voice in the back of your head. And we never know the impact that that is going to have. They know, and it might come back to you in years, and you have a story from someone that says, you know, you really touched me 10 years ago. And so we don't know how much time we have, and just to take advantage of every moment that we have to, you know, offer God's love to other people.
Perfect. Thank you. That's lovely. Anybody else? Yes.
The two activities that I love the most are skiing and doing theater. And with skiing, if not in the present moment, all the time, that's when you have an accident.
Yes, yes.
So what I and doing theater, if you are not in the present moment, you don't know where you are, and you don't know who you are as a character, and it's frightening. So that is where my love for those two activities come from, the opportunity to be in the present moment.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely right. Absolutely right. So, yes, Tom, there we are.
I remember doing a Vipassana retreat with a Thailandese master, and he said, Nama Rupa, which is the eternal comes from the body. So it's actually that when we actually go to the body and just, it seems ironic because it's such a normal thing like the body is what the gateway to everything. So just, and then that's, so it seems an irony, and yet it's a wonderful truth. So
I think that's lovely. And just to use it to just to advertise something, which is in my nature. I mean, the embodiment. We had Christian Dillo here last year who talked about mindfulness, his Buddhist teacher. But his teacher is Susan Aposhin. And she's coming this week, year in May, to talk about bodyfulness as opposed to mindfulness. And that is her whole approach, which is to say the stillness of the body is where we enter into the present moment. So I totally understand what you're saying. And I think that you know, particularly, you know, I tend to be in my mind a lot, and much more should be, you know, should be much more in my body. So I think you're absolutely right to point us in that direction. If you feel moved to make a donation to the chapel, please go to aspenchapel.org. Thank you. And if you'd like to receive these podcasts regularly, subscribe to the Aspen Chapel through Apple, Google Play, YouTube, or any other outlet.